Details of the Prime Minister's climate deal with the Nationals will be made public finally today after it's cleared by a joint meeting of the coalition parties. It will likely include significant funds for regional infrastructure as well as financial rewards for farmers for land management and carbon storage. And the Productivity Commission, we understand, will conduct regular reviews of the economic impact on regional communities of the plan to reach net zero by 2050. Simon Birmingham is the Finance Minister and Government Leader in the Senate. He joins us in Parliament House Studios. Minister, welcome back to Breakfast.
Good morning, Fran. Great to be with you again.
You control the purse strings. How much will this deal with the Nationals cost taxpayers?
Well, Fran, this deal involves a couple of components. One is our ongoing investment in relation to achieving net zero by 2050, as we now will strive to do as a nation, and that's going to see some $80 billion between now and 2030 of combined public and private sector investment necessary across Australia. Wherever possible, we seek to try to drive that investment into some of the areas of the economy, some of the regional areas that we know will face some of those transition difficulties if other parts of the world change their energy use and their consumption of Australia's resources. And that's, for example, why our $1.2 billion hydrogen strategy focuses on the creation of hydrogen hubs, and that we anticipate that will support hubs in regions like Gladstone in central Queensland, or the Hunter Valley or the Pilbara, regions that have immense potential to benefit from new industries. And that's where we want to make sure that we target that type of investment and support.
Okay, but what about the deal with the Nationals? How much is that going to cost? The Nationals, for instance, want, we understand, a regional infrastructure future fund. Is that the centrepiece of the deal? What funding stream will it have?
No, Fran, I mean, that type of investment is the type of thing that that a coalition government with Liberal and National Party members across the country who represent rural and regional Australia are always looking to pursue investments in. It's our government that's delivering.
I'm not saying you shouldn't have it. I'm saying how much will it cost?
We'll continue. This is about continued investment, really, in rural and regional Australia and in the infrastructure needs of rural and regional Australia, as we do indeed in our city areas too. You know, we're the government that is delivering the Inland Rail, long talked about, but our government's delivering it. We're the one delivering the Western Sydney Airport, long talked about, but our government is building it and delivering it. And we'll continue to pursue those sorts of infrastructure investments where they're for the good of the nation.
Minister, I've got a lot of people writing in asking about this because the government's catch cry is technology, not taxes, but we do understand the major elements of the National Party package, and some of them have a price tag attached. One is a regional future fund. One is provide future payments and other incentives for not clearing land and protecting species. Another is develop infrastructure transport package, including rail, and provide financial rewards for farmers for previous actions, for instance, such as not clearing land, so Australia could meet its care targets. What is the price tag? There must be dollar amounts against this package.
Well, Fran, there are dollar amounts in terms of areas of investment we're undertaking to achieve net zero. And there are different projects that we are undertaking in relation to infrastructure investments around the country.
But these are not static demands you've got from the Nats, so what's it going to cost?
These are not static things either, though, Fran, and that's the point that I'm making, that regional infrastructure investment out to 2050 is not something that is a static figure of today. It's going to be something that certainly Australians should trust a Liberal and National government to continue invest in, as we have done already. And what we'll pursue here is ensuring that investment, wherever possible, as I said, be it in those areas of hydrogen I talked about, or indeed you mentioned farmers and agriculture and the important opportunities for increased use of soil carbon measurement that can create win-win outcomes, making farmers more productive and giving them an opportunity to play a role significantly in achieving net zero. That's where we want to make sure we harness those investment opportunities so that we can achieve the goals of net zero as well as strong, prosperous regional communities.
Okay, the Regional Infrastructure Future Fund seems to be one of the centrepieces of this package. You haven't told us what the funding for stream will be or how much is in it, but regardless of that, how will you make sure it doesn't become an expensive National Party slush fund paid for by the taxpayer?
Because, Fran, what we will always do with investment, particularly in infrastructure, but indeed in other programs, be it our manufacturing investment strategy, be it our Agriculture 2030 strategy, is seek to ensure we have The rules that guide that funding towards the maximum benefit when it comes to job creation, when it comes to community benefit, all of this is about ensuring that we achieve net zero by 2050 in ways that maximise the job opportunities for Australians, that deliver the type of support for regional communities to be able to adjust, that if countries like Japan and Korea, some of our major export markets, change their consumption patterns in terms of the resources and energy that they buy from Australia, we want to make sure that we've replaced that where possible, so we have new export industries into those markets, new resources, new energy sources, and also that where possible, they are supporting and underpinning jobs in communities that may have been impacted by that transition. That, I think, is an entirely sensible way to go about things. And it's a contrast, I guess, in the sense that the debate we have been having, and we've been working through these plans, not just over days or weeks, but many of them over years in terms of how the plans are developed, and particularly the stretch goals to achieve lower emissions. We've been having the right debates as a coalition about how you achieve net zero whilst protecting regional communities and jobs, not just the Labor approach of signing up to a target without those sorts of protections or plans.
The Nets came up with this idea of the Productivity Commission to review the economic impact of the net zero pledge on rural and regional communities every 5 years, which I guess is measuring what you've just described there, the success of it, about helping these communities adjust, about trying to introduce new industries to take up the slack when other things drop off as global demand drops off. What happens if the review finds jobs are lost, livelihoods curtailed, it's not been taken up by something then? What happens then? Will that trigger compensation? Is that written into this deal?
What it will do is certainly focus the minds of the government of the day very clearly on where additional investment and support may be necessary to help ensure the transition is more successful than the type of scenario you've painted. And so, again, it's a very prudent and wise step to make sure that you have that embedded analysis that I trust governments of any political persuasion would do. Certainly our government's committing to do so, and I hope that the Labor Party will see the wisdom in that, that you should actually have that health check, if you like, on the impacts in different parts of Australia, so that governments know if they need to do more, support those communities more, invest in trying to secure the different industry transitions in those sectors, then that they're actually well informed in how they do so.
It looks as though the government caved into the Nats by agreeing to not increase the interim target, but updated projections for 2030 will be released today. They're expected to show emissions reductions have exceeded the 26 to 28% target and will come in around 35%. If the government's so confident about that projection, why not codify it into a firm target?
Well, our country is one of the few in the world who has the track record of going into climate change talks and being able to point to the fact that we have routinely met and exceeded the targets that we've made and the commitments that we've made. And
so when will you ever have the confidence to sign up to one? If we're going to do that regularly and we're heading for 35, why not just sign on to it?
Well, Fran, it's what you do that matters most, and that is certainly Australia's track record of meeting and beating the commitments we make, and what we'll be outlining in terms of the plan released today and the commitments made in Glasgow is firmly demonstrating how Australia is on track to once again meet and beat those commitments exceed the 26 to 28% reduction targets. We've already seen emissions reduced by more than 20% since 2005. That's more than New Zealand, it's more than Canada, it's more than the United States, it's more than many other countries in the world that Australia has already reduced our emissions by. And unlike many others, we will be able to demonstrate that we are on track to exceed those 2030 targets as well.
The Prime Minister will take to Glasgow a firm commitment for net zero by 2050. That's a formal commitment under the UN protocols, but he won't legislate it. And he says Labor's pledge to legislate that commitment had the potential to outlaw industries like coal before their time was up. What does that even mean? If both major parties are committed to the same goal, it suggests the government wants to leave itself an out. What does it mean Labor would outlaw coal?
Well, Fran, it's about how you get there. And we've been clear that our approach is through investment in the technologies that can ensure Australian industries right now can manage to reduce their emissions footprint wherever possible, that new industries can emerge through the investments. And that's why the technology roadmap that we released quite some time ago sets out the different stretch goals for the future in terms of the type of price you need to be able to achieve clean hydrogen or energy storage or low emission steel or low emissions aluminium or soil carbon measurement or carbon capture and storage, all important ways to actually try to drive efficiencies in terms of cleaner, low emissions, zero emissions ways of going about achieving things. And now, Labor have simply announced a target. They haven't detailed how they expect to get there. And they certainly haven't, as the Prime Minister has, ruled out the potential of closing down certain parts of Australia's industries to meet that target. What we're seeking to do...
Well, they haven't ruled it out, but they haven't said they're going to either. I mean, we haven't seen your plan either.
We're probably going to see quite a detailed plan, but this is a plan that builds...
When will we see that?
Fran, people will be seeing those updates to our technology investment roadmap today when the Prime Minister releases those details.
And that's the plan, is it? All those things together makes up the plan?
This is the work that we have been doing, not for days or weeks, but for years, building upon the work, be it the fact that as a country we're investing in the largest energy storage project in the Southern Hemisphere, which is Snowy 2.0, that we're upgrading our energy grid to through the Battery of the Nation project, connecting Tasmania's clean hydropower to the nation.
Yeah, I'm sorry to interrupt, Minister, but I don't have time to go through all those. I just want to ask you one final political question, because we now have three National Cabinet Ministers, including the Deputy Prime Minister, Barnaby Joyce, who personally oppose the government's policy on net zero. They do not support it. We've also got Queensland Senator Matt Canavan, who told us earlier he will campaign against net zero. So too will the LNP candidate in the mining seat of Flynn, Colin Boyce, who says the anger and fear on the ground are palpable. Is that acceptable to you in this election to have... coalition members campaigning against a key policy, or is that a strategy that you think is the only way to try and counter the likes of Pauline Hanson and Clive Palmer?
Well, Fran, I expect the members of the Cabinet and the government to support the government's policy, but unlike the Labor Party, the Liberal and National parties don't expel individual MPs who hold a different point of view, who might disagree with one particular policy area. Indeed, it's these types of debates that enable us to effectively address all of the issues that we need to face and front up to in relation to these difficult policy decisions. There's no point pretending these are easy policy decisions where you can just commit to net zero and it magically happens without impact anywhere. And that's why working carefully with rural and regional, Liberal and National MPs, and indeed those right across the country who wanted to see a net zero achieved, has been a very important part of this journey.
Senator Birmingham, thank you very much.
Thanks, Fran. My pleasure.
Simon Birmingham is the Finance Minister and the Leader of the Government in the Senate.